Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Well, again, welcome everyone. Welcome all of you, those on Zoom. You know, quite a few years ago, I reading through the various sutras, and I read the Platform Sutra, and it was a good read. It was a good read. But a few weeks ago, I decided to revisit it, and this time, it really came alive for me. So I thought I would share some excerpts from the Platform Sutra and the legacy of Wei Nung, the author. So this is kind of like the cliff notes, because you can't possibly cover much in this short period of time. So the Platform Sutra of Wei Nung, the sixth patriarch of Chinese Zen, or Chan, is one of the most influential texts of Chan Buddhism. Wei Nung was an illiterate woodcutter who attained enlightenment and went on to demonstrate the depth and clarity of his insight. His example has demonstrated to generations of Zen students and spiritual seekers that awakening is attainable in this lifetime, regardless of education or social standing. In Japanese, Wei Nung is known as Eno. The story of Wei Nung and his teachings is quite remarkable. Nearly all of what we know about Wei Nung is recorded in the Platform Sutra, a collection of talks given by the sixth patriarch. This is a seminal work of Zen literature from which some of the classic koans have evolved, including some of which Wei Nung himself participates in or is part of. To give you a sense of what was important to Wei Nung, as recorded in the Platform Sutra, here are some of the sections of the sutra. The sutra starts out with an autobiography and discusses how he came to be recognized as the successor of the fifth patriarch, and teaches how to directly realize Buddha nature. The second section relates to the nature of wisdom and the importance of directly encountering the true mind. The other sections include meditation and wisdom, seated meditation, the four vows, precepts, and the three refuges, just to name a few of the sections. Red Pine, who is one of the world's most respected translators of Chinese literature, says this in his translation of the Platform Sutra. Normally, readers of a spiritual teaching would expect an explanation of various concepts that appear in this text. This is what we think a teaching consists of: concepts, ideas, constructions of the mind. But Wei Nung's teaching is not a teaching of concepts. In fact, it's just the opposite. It is a teaching of no concepts. Every word he speaks is directed at freeing people from whatever concepts block their awareness of their own nature. The core teachings of Wei Nung is see your nature and be Buddha. The influence of Wei Nung, who lived from about 638 to 713, resonates through Chan and Zen Buddhism to this day. The passages in the Platform Sutra are still actively discussed and used in all the schools of Zen. Some scholars consider Wei Nung, not Bodhidharma, to be the true father of Zen. His tenure at the beginning of the Tang Dynasty marks the beginning of what is known as the Golden Age of Zen. Wei Nong left his mark at a time when Zen was shedding its Indian background and was finding its own unique way. From Wei Nong flows all, I repeat, all the schools of Zen that exist today. And I'll say more about this shortly. Historians believe that the Platform Sutra was composed after Wei Nong's death by one of his Dharma heirs. During his lifetime, his teachings focused primarily on inherent enlightenment, sudden awakening, the wisdom of emptiness, or sunyata, and meditation. His emphasis was on realization through direct experience rather than the study of sutras and intellectual pursuits. Legend has it that to keep his disciples focused on direct experience, he went so far as to rip up sutras and lock up libraries. So, where does Wei Nong fit in from a historical perspective? The formative years of Zen started with the Indian monk Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma lived during the 5th or 6th century and is traditionally credited as transmitting Buddhism from India to China and is regarded as the first Zen patriarch. After Bodhidharma came Huke. He was the second patriarch. Now, if you remember when I spoke about Bodhidharma last year, Huke was the guy that wanted to be Bodhidharma's disciple. And he stayed for 2 or 3 days up to his knees in snow, pounding on Bodhidharma's door, and Bodhidharma kept on telling him to go away. Until finally, one day, he just decided he's going to cut off his arm as a show of sincerity. Then Bodhidharma kind of said, well, okay, come in before you bleed all over the place. So he is the second patriarch. The third patriarch was Tsing Ten, and he's credited with being the author of the much beloved Hsinchen Ming, or Faith in Mind, poem. Little is known of the fourth patriarch. The story of Wei Nong really starts with the fifth patriarch, Hunjin. As I mentioned, Wei Nong was a poor, illiterate young man from southern China. He sold firewood to support himself and his widowed mother. One day, as he was walking through the marketplace, he heard a monk reciting the Diamond Sutra. He was so overwhelmed by what he heard, so much so that he had an awakening experience. The monk reciting the sutra was from Hongjin's monastery. Wei Nong traveled to the monastery and presented himself to Hongjin. The master asked, "Where are you from, and what do you hope to get by coming to this monastery?" Wei Nong mentioned his hometown and then states he has come to the monastery because he wants to be a Buddha. Not a monk, a Buddha. Pretty bold. The master then insults him, saying, "But you're from down south. And a jungle rat, a barbarian as well. How can you possibly be a Buddha?" Apparently, calling Wei Nong a barbarian was a slur, and calling him a jungle rat was an ethnic slur. As a side note, if you remember, Bodhidharma, who came from the south or India, was also called a barbarian, actually, a blue-eyed barbarian. Wei Nong's response to the master was this: "People come from the north or south, but not their Buddha nature. The life of this jungle rat and the life of you, the master, aren't the same. But how can our Buddha nature differ?" The master immediately recognized that this uneducated young man had a vast understanding of the Dharma, more so than some of his disciples. But to protect Wei Nong from the monks, who were often filled with pride, the The master stayed silent on his extraordinary exchange with Wei Nong. So he puts him to work doing menial chores, primarily processing rice. So he essentially became a worker out of sight. Hongjin's monastery, like many of the others of the time, focused on studying the sutras and intellectual investigations of Buddhism. A pivotal moment in Zen history came one day when Hongjin, who was getting up there in age, challenged his monks to compose a verse that expressed their understanding of the Dharma. If any verse reflects the truth, the monk who composed it would become his successor or the sixth patriarch. The master was apparently not so pleased with his disciples, feeling that they were not understanding the heart of his teachings. And this is what he says to his disciples. In studying Dharma, you must not remain satisfied by just copying my words. Make a poem to show your understanding and demonstrate your Zen abilities. So it's a challenge to his monks to show him what they really have learned and what they really know. Most of the monks were too afraid to try to write a verse themselves. They assumed that the head monk would write one and that he would be the natural Dharma successor. So, in fact, the head monk does write a verse and posts it on the wall next to the master's room. And here is his verse. The body is the Bodhi tree. The heart mind is like a mirror. Moment by moment, wipe and polish it, not allowing dust to collect. Let me repeat that. The body is the Bodhi tree. The heart mind is like a mirror. Moment by moment, wipe and polish it, not allowing dust to collect. The head monk's verse emphasizes the importance of vigilance, discipline, always polishing to keep the mirror clean. Hearing this, Wang Dong decides to compose a verse of his own, which one of the monks writes on the same wall for him. Remember, Wei Nong can't read or write. So this is his verse. Bodhi originally has no tree. The mirror doesn't have a stand. Our Buddha nature is forever pure. Where is there room for dust? And let me repeat that. Bodhi originally has no tree. The mirror doesn't have a stand. Our Buddha nature is forever pure. Where is there room for dust? The head monk's verse emphasizes the need for practice and diligence. Wei Nong's verse shows just the opposite. Our Buddha nature is always pure. We are not lacking anything. Everything is already free, totally itself, and at the same time, totally interconnected with everything else. There's nothing to obtain. There is nothing but this moment, and we are already here, part of it. We only have to see more clearly or wake up to what already exists. Doesn't this sound familiar? Isn't this what we practice now? When the master sees Wei Nong's verse, he immediately recognizes the understanding that is shown here. But he waits until midnight to summon Wei Nong to his chamber, because he's afraid the other monks who are loyal to the head monk will be upset and jealous and possibly try to harm Wei Nong, who they consider to be an idiot and barbarian from the south. Apparently, Zen monasteries in ancient China were not that different from contemporary workplaces in terms of office politics and rivalries. So we have this middle of the night ceremony in which Wei Nong is given the master's robe and bowl as a mark of Dharma transmission. The master tells Wei Nong that my Dharma must be transmitted mind to mind. You must help people awaken to themselves. And with that, Wei Nong disappears off into the night after being advised by Hunjin to stay out of sight for a number of years before beginning to offer teachings. This entire story is quite dramatic, including the secret midnight transmission of the robe and ball and the flight of Wei Nong into the forest for some 8 years. Now, the monks do go after him, number of them, because they just see him as a fool, and the master made an error by giving him the robe and the bowl. So they spend a lot of time trying to find him, and they can't, except for one disciple who was a former military officer, and he had tracking skills. And he eventually tracked down Wei Nong. And the exchange that evolved out of that was nonviolent. And this disciple recognized that Wei Nong really had his understanding pretty clear on the Dharma. And this actually is one koan. And a number of the koan collections. Now, I need to say a few words here about the significance of the robe and bowl and the master statement to Wei Nong, "My Dharma must be transmitted mind to mind." From the time of the Buddha, the handing over of the teacher's robe and bowl to a disciple was an acknowledgement of Dharma transmission or succession. From the master to the disciple. For example, Bodhidharma was the 28th in succession from the time of the Buddha. So when Hunjin gave Wei Nong the bowl and roll, he became the 33rd in succession. Dharma transmission up to this point was very linear. Only one person at a time could receive Dharma transmission. The robe and the bowl. When the master stated to Wei Nong, "My Dharma must be transmitted mind to mind," Dharma transmission changed in a profound way. From that point on, transmission was placed on the teachings and not on physical objects, the robe and the bowl. This allowed Wei Nong and his disciples to pass on Dharma transmission to more than one person during their lifetime. As a result, Zen really took off from that point on. And it's interesting, if you look at a lineage chart, with regards to Zen, from the time of the Buddha, it is linear, right down the line, robe and bowl being transmitted, person to person to person to Bodhidharma. And right down the line to Hunjin. And then, so it's linear up to that point, and then you see it go lateral, these lineage charts. And underneath them, on that vertical, on that horizontal scale, you'll see various disciples. And under those disciples, you'll see more disciples. So Zen really, like I said, Zen really took off from that point on. But let's turn our attention back to the two verses that were placed on the wall next to the master's door. So it seems that the head monk's verse is inadequate, and Wei Nong's is the right perspective and more profound in its understanding of the Dharma. The reason that the head monk's verse was judged inferior is that its perspective is that we must always work very hard to polish the mirror. That our minds will only awaken after long and arduous mirror polishing. Lots of zazen, lots of sutra chanting, lots of bowing, lots of studying, lots of meetings with the master. From this perspective, it is a long slog to gradual awakening. There is no such thing as sudden realization. But isn't this contrary to many of the koans found in the various koan collections today, where awakening is sudden, based on given circumstances and or exchange with the master. In contrast, the verse of Wei Nong is pointing to the absolute, to emptiness, when he says there is no stand for the mirror and no dust. There's only this moment, always arising fresh, and all we need to do is be fully present to it. Our Buddha nature is already pure. We are not lacking anything. The reality is that our Zen practice is about both perspectives. Now, you could say it is the perspective of the relative and absolute. In the relative world, the world of form, we do need to practice. We do benefit from study. We do need to meditate to cultivate clear seeing. We need to take time from the busyness of our lives to come together like tonight and for Zazenkai liturgy and sesshin. At the same time, we don't want to lose sight of the perspective of the absolute, that Wei Nong shows us that everything is just as it is each moment, that each moment has its own perfection, that we are already part of it. And it is from this perspective of the absolute that Wei Nong will come to give his teachings on the precepts, as recorded in the Platform Sutra. Usually in Buddhism, the precepts are seen as guidelines for ethical conduct in the world. And of course, they are that. But Wei Nong understands them a little differently, that morality originates with the mind. Historically, the difference in the practice orientation of the head monk and Wei Nong turned into a pretty big deal, with Chinese Zen schools, northern schools, becoming associated with the gradual approach, and the southern schools with the sudden approach. There's a whole section in the Platform Sutra just devoted to this topic. One of the primary themes of the sutra is around meditation and wisdom. Wei Nong states that meditation and wisdom are of one essence, not two. And this is what he says. Good friends, meditation and wisdom are like a lamp and its light. When there's a lamp, there is light. The lamp is the light's body, and the light is the lamp's function. They have two names, but not two bodies. This teaching concerning meditation and wisdom is like this. Why is Wei Nong's teaching significant? For it to make sense to us, we have to look at this word wisdom. We often think of the word wisdom as thinking up brilliant ideas and making insightful pronouncements, or wisdom as something in dusty books on the shelf from ancient philosophers. But wisdom is sometimes is something quite different in the Dharma. The prajna, or wisdom in the Dharma, is considered our original mind. It is said to be before knowledge, before there is a person who knows and something that is known. There is just the arising of each unique moment. One way we could see the world, the word, one way we could see the word wisdom is as clear seeing into our ever-changing reality. Clear seeing into the self, not as isolated or fixed, separate from the rest of the universe, but as open and fluid. Each time we sit down on the cushion, we have an opportunity to see this for ourselves. So Wei Nong's emphasis that the practice of clear seeing is what we call Zazen, and the practice of Zazen is the practice of clear seeing. One does not come first, one is not an effect or result of the other. So I'd like to just read a little bit, and this is from Shodoharada, and this is a commentary on the Platform Sutra by him. And he's an abbot at one of the monasteries in Japan. In asking the question, what is our face before our parents were born? The sixth patriarch gave us the koan that is now widely used. This koan, I believe, is in the Gateless Gate of number 23 or 24, and it's the one that talks about, is it the wind or the flag moving? The sixth patriarch also gave us a lasting definition of the word zazen. The za of zazen is to not give rise to thoughts about anything we see or hear externally. This does not mean we should shut down our senses and close our eyes to seeing and our ears to hearing. Rather, we sit wide open, even though our bodies hurt and even though we are tired and face constant challenges. We can't sit in a deep, dark cave and avoid life's difficulties. Rather, we encounter everything that comes our way. At the same time, we give no attention to anything that comes up from within. Not becoming lost in our thoughts and feelings is the Zen of Zazen. All of those thoughts are external to that which gives birth to them. Don't get pulled down by things, but realize that they all arise from emptiness. Will that source be in pain? Will that source be happy or sad? Are we fooled by our feelings and emotions? We have to let them all go. The sixth patriarch, even as he left his own words to teach us, constantly warned against the dangers of attachment. We must not burden ourselves even with his teachings. All that the platform says is useless. We don't experience for ourselves the spirit of the sixth patriarch. So, in summary, the essence of Wei Nong's legend is of an outsider, a layperson, said to be unlettered and uncultured, who brings an immediacy and freshness to Zen. So, right from the start, he is exemplifying Zen as a direct path that does not require status or any fancy education, nor complicated rituals. Bodhidharma taught direct pointing at the mind, and Wei Nong, centuries later, carried forward the same emphasis in a more direct and practical way.